The Batteries Included podcast is brought to you with United Chargers and their Grizzly range. The next generation of Grizzly is here. Meet the Grizzly Ultimate, the most powerful AC level 2 charger for home use. With a maximum current of 80 amps, that's 19.2 kilowatts. Your vehicle could be charged up to twice as fast as a standard level 2 and up to 15 times faster than a level 1. And of course, it's Wi-Fi connected, so you can take control of your home charging, view stats, set a charging schedule, take part in demand response programs, and control your charger remotely. And that joins the lineup alongside the original Grizzly Classic. The Grizzly Duo, designed to charge two vehicles at the same time. The Grizzly Mini, a portable charging station. And the Grizzly Smart, a revolutionary smart EV charger. Those chargers can adjust the current from 16 amps up to 40 amps, that's 9.6 kilowatts. Plus, the Grizzly Ranger IP67 rated, built in Canada, and with the highest quality materials, you can order yours right now. Go to unitedchargers.com, that's unitedchargers.com.
Hello and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. Friday, March 7th, 2025, episode 78. On today's show, how tariffs will affect the electric vehicle industry. We visit Tello for the reveal of their driving prototype mini truck and the debut of the Volvo ES90. And of course, much, much more. I'm your host, Martin Lee, from the EV News Daily podcast. Joining us today is the world's foremost Chevy Equinox enthusiast, Mr. Tom Mologany, and senior editor at Inside EVs, host of the YouTube channel State of Charge as well. We also have Dominic Yoni, longtime EV journalist and host of the YouTube channel Drive Electric with Dominic. And hopefully later on the show, he's incredibly busy this week, a week of all weeks, getting his head around the tariffs and things like that. We have invited John McElroy on, longtime automotive journalist, creator of Autoline as well. You see him on the weekly news show, Autoline Weekly, and the After Hours live webcast as well. If he can join us, he will. We'd love to have him on. So he's a very, very busy boy this week, but he knows Detroit better than anyone. And hopefully, John can, if he can be here this week, to fill us in on the tariffs. Because, you know, the three of us jokers could have our say on it. But let's get an expert on, and let's get John on. Now, when it comes to experts, there is nobody more of an expert on charging than our man Tom there on screen, and soon to be in your ears if you're listening to the audio version of the podcast. And that is an update to the Ford F-150 Lightning. Now, Tom, this sounds really interesting. Ford began pushing out an OTA software update allowing 2022 and 2023 F-150 Lightnings to charge better and just overall generally be better. You have, of course, a video out on it. What's the deal?
So when the 2024 Lightning came out, owners started noticing that it was actually charging a little bit better than the 2022 and 2023s. And I had reached out to Ford back then and said, hey, I think you did something here, but I didn't get one. I didn't even ask to loan one. Ford would have given me a truck, but honestly, I have so much other things going on. But I noticed that it seemed people were getting higher peak charging rates. The vehicles were charging a little bit quicker. I reached out to Ford and the media said, hey, yeah, we'll get back to you on that. You know, it's possible that they did something because the media folks don't know everything that's going on with every single update and so forth. But then they never got back to me and I forgot about it. Now, back in December, I go down to the Iona soft opening when Kyle and Anna Speck organized that get together down there to do like a stress test on the Iona Apex site before they opened up officially. I plug in. I did a 0 to 90% charging session down there, drove my Lightning down there, and there's Pete on the side of the charger. He's in the comment section today. He drove down with me. And noticed that the vehicle was pulling 500 amps right from the get-go. And that wasn't the case before. The previous maximum current that the Lightnings could pull was 450 amps. So I know immediately, okay, now my suspicions that the vehicles are charging better or differently is confirmed. So when we got back to Jersey, I emailed Ford and said, okay, guys, remember the email I sent you about 2 months ago? Now you need to respond. They said, okay, Tom, sorry, we forgot about it. We'll get an answer. About a week later, got the answer and said, look, yes, the Ford was sending out updates to bring 2022-2023 Lightnings up to the same charging profile that the 2024s had. And that meant that in the initial boost period, where for the first like 7 to 9 minutes all Ford electric vehicles get like the maximum current, and then they start to derate into their normal charging curve. We boosted that up from 450 amps to 500 amps and also massaged the rest of the charging curve. So this should be an overall improvement. So I said, oh, fantastic. They said, look, you were one of the first people to get the update. Perhaps I got an update notice in the truck. Sometimes I'm busy and I just click yes, or my wife might've been driving it that day and she just knocked it off the screen. Didn't even realize it was there. And, so yeah, you have it, and we're going to be rolling it out to everybody else really soon. Actually, they've already done that. Most people have it already, not everyone, but they're putting it out over at OTA update. It's in software 10.3.0. If you didn't get this, they called it a customer satisfaction program, which they started rolling out at the end of last year. And that was a different name, like 53B something. I forgot. I put it in my video. So I did a 10 to 80% charge recording to compare it to my previous charge recordings, just to see, well, okay, we know it's going to accept more current. They said it has a better charging profile. Let's see exactly how much better it is. And it appears as though it has cut my charging time down from 10 to 80%, in ideal conditions, of course, from about 44 to 45 minutes to now a little under 40 minutes. So it shaved about 5 minutes off of the 10 to 80% charging time, which is about 11%, which is a significant increase. The vehicle still doesn't charge very well, you know, on DC fast charging. It's still not top of class by any means on a DC fast charger, but it's acceptable as far as I'm concerned. I've done many long road trips. You saw me and Kyle drove Lightnings down to Florida. It was a 1,000-mile race. We did it in 16 hours, you know, which isn't bad for 1,000 miles, a little over 16 hours. And, yeah. I drive it all around, and it's not terrible. But I wish we could shave that 10 to 80% down to about 30 minutes. That would be a significant increase from what it is now. But it's an improvement. And it's good to see that. If you're watching on YouTube now,
That yellow area is the new expanded, that top red line is new software. So 2022 truck, in case it's too small on someone's phone, but new software. You've started the charge later at 10%, not 5. Does that matter with the F-150 Lightning?
So not really. And I've done my previous video showed that the charging profile will be just about the same. It's unique. Ford's charging strategy is unique. Not very many other electric vehicle manufacturers do what they do, where it's almost at any point that you plug in, and this is for the Lightning and the Mach-E, you get this full current boost period for a little under 10 minutes. And that's if you plug it anywhere up to, like, I think 50 or 60% state of charge. And then it slows, it lowers its charging rate. But if you are watching on the on YouTube now, and you could see the screen there, you could see the red line is my current line. And I also compared it to a 5 to 80% and a 15 to 80% that I had done before. The black is the 5 to 80%. The blue is the 15 to 80%. And you notice both of those had like a little boost period in the beginning. But then they both drop off radically. When that boost period is over, they drop about 30, 35% and then hold a slightly higher charging rate for a little while. And then they lower down to right between 115 and 125 kilowatts all the way up to 80%. That's the Lightning's charging profile. Now take a look at the red line, which is the new profile. It has a higher charging rate because it can take in 500 amps. And it holds it for slightly longer than the other two. And then we dropped it off the screen. The full charging rate doesn't drop off a cliff like it does with the previous software. It now gradually goes down and then holds about 165 kilowatts all the way up to 40% state of charge, which is much better than before. And then it gradually lowers down, and not until after 50% state of charge does it land in that 120, 125 kilowatt range all the way up to 80%. So, this is definitely an improvement, and it means shorter time at the charger. Now, a lot of people have been asking, will the Mach-E get this? I've already asked Ford. They haven't responded yet. But, you know, they said that they will get me an answer. As of now, no, the Mach-E's not getting this pushed out. But hopefully they will. I would believe that they would. But as you can see on this graph here, that yellow, that's all extra kilowatt hour over my 5 to 80% charging rate. So that's a significant amount of extra power. And faster charging is better for everyone.
What's Mark Norman say here, Dom?
Okay, I'm reading this here. Speaking of Ford, my friend's going to Lemon Law his Lightning after it stranded him 3 times in a month. Feel awful. I convinced him to get it. Was just hoping someone at Ford might be watching. Sorry to hear about that, Mark. Unfortunately, it does happen with every type of vehicle. It probably happens at a little bit of a higher rate for electric vehicles because they're still new to automakers, and they're still, you know, significant catastrophic failures that happen that it takes the automakers a little bit longer to figure out because they've been doing combustion for 100 years. So that's unfortunate. But it does happen with every type of vehicle. You know, Ford needs to get on top of this, and figure it out. The dealer, honestly, this is where the dealer needs to advocate for your friend. You know, the dealers talk about how we shouldn't have direct sales because, you know, the customers are the ones that get left out if they're just dealing with an OEM. This is where if dealers are going to give us any value, this is a situation where the dealer has to contact Ford and say, BS, this guy, we can't fix this problem. You need to step up and Lemon Law, give the guy a new truck or something like that. So I hope that gets straightened out, Mark, soon.
Yeah, Jordan says getting stranded is no fun. Has that happened then? Oh, hey, by the way, welcome. Jordan's watching as well, so that's cool. But I didn't know he got stranded in one, so there you go. We've got another graphic on screen, Tom, for our viewers, our listeners who are watching on YouTube. What's this one that we're looking at right now?
Yeah, so that's my new master charging
like graph, it,
which I do for all the electric vehicles now, and I have it hosted on evchargingstations.com, my website. So I'm slowly building these out for all of the electric vehicles. And you can see most of the charts are 10 to 80%, but some of them are going to be 0 to 100%. So you can see from every 10% block, a starting point to a finishing point, how long it takes to charge, how much power is delivered in that section, like the average charging power. How many kilowatt hours were added, how much range was added. So literally, if you have an electric vehicle that I've made a graph for, you could print that thing up, put it in your glove box, and you could be driving somewhere and be like, shoot, I'm like 50 miles short of my destination, but I'm at like 40% state of charge, and there's a charger. I don't know how long I have to stay to get those 40 miles. You can pull this thing out and it'll tell you exactly, oh, I just need 10 minutes or whatever. So it's a very useful chart, and I've had a lot of people email me and say, you know, this is like the best chart that you've ever made. We really appreciate it. As you can tell, it's a lot of work, but it's a super useful chart. And these will all be hosted on evchargingstations.com for every EV. You'll be able to download and print it for your EV.
Now, it's just the way that my brain works. You could sell these. I know that you won't because you add to the community, but you could like laminate these, have them really nice. Like someone could download them for free on their home printer, but like you can make this a really nice thing that someone has in their glove box and charge like $5 each one. But I know, you know, I'm just looking to rinse more money out of every opportunity. But you do this because you really help raise the education level of people out there with electric vehicles. And we had one final thing that you sent over as well. It'd be fascinating just to get a quick explain of this, which is this line that goes from bottom left to top right, the 2022 Ford F-150 Lightning Lariat extended range with the new software. What's this?
Yeah, so this is the miles added chart, which there's a lot of people doing charging information out there, and I'm always trying to do something that some other people aren't doing. You know, we're all trying to carve our niches out, and Kyle and Jordan and the guys over at Out of Spec do great fast charge analysis. But, you know, we're always trying to do something like those guys do the 10 to 80% challenge, which is awesome. I wish I would have thought of that first. I think that's a fantastic metric to use. I'm doing miles per minute and how many miles, how long it takes to add a certain amount of miles. And I'm creating charts for all the EVs on these. So if you take a look at this, this is in a 10 to 80% charging session. How long does it take you to add 50 miles of range, 100 miles of range, 150 miles of range, and 200 miles of range. And I use two metrics here. One is for EPA, like if you're going to use the EPA as your standard, how long it adds. And then the other one is my 70 mile an hour higher range test, which will always be, not always, but usually be a little bit lower. So, you know, if you're driving 70 miles an hour and you plug in at 10%, this chart here will tell you how long you have to stay to add a certain amount of miles. Now, understand it. I think most people here know this. This is dependent on good conditions. You know, if this is the winter, it's different. If you're going to drive 85 miles an hour, it's different. If you're towing a trailer, it's different. It's impossible to account for all those things. But at least this is a baseline that you can work off of with how fast it takes to, how long it takes to add range when you're on a road trip.
Mm. And this adds efficiency into the equation, which is the thing that no one talks about. And you talk about all the time, because two EVs with entirely different efficiencies are going to give you wildly different graphs, even though one might charge, you know, 50 kilowatts higher peak and have a great charge curve and all the things we talk about. Yep. But if it's got awful efficiency, well, then the graph's going to look very, very different because it's going to eat through that that stored energy.
Yeah, I think a lot of like legacy reporters, let's say, or journalists from many of the legacy car outlets, when they talk about how fast a car charges, they leave out the efficiency. They talk about, 10 to 80% and it's got a max charging rate of 350 kilowatts and all this stuff. But at the end of the day, what really matters is how far you can go after staying a certain period of time, right? And you have to factor in the vehicle's efficiency in that case. So that's what I focus on more so than how quick it gets to 80% is how long it takes to add miles. And I think that's the most important metric for me, at least. And, you know, I'm not denigrating what other people's work. They can use any metric they want. But I think the miles added per minute and how long it takes to add a certain amount of range is the most important when we're talking about DC fast.
Love a charging update. Thank you, Tom. All right, we'll take a quick break for our Audio Boom listeners. Love a quick charging update, Tom. Thank you. All right, we'll take a quick break for our audio listeners listening to the audio feed. And when we come back, lots to get into, including the new Volvo ES90 and the Escalade gets even bigger. Plus, an updated Honda Prologue. Stick around, back in a mo. Totally agree. All right, so you can check out that video on Tom's channel, and you can find out the latest with you know what Tom has been doing. I'm just double checking that John hasn't joined us while we've been talking about that. Be great if he does, but if not, I mean, we've got a lot to talk about on the podcast this week. Dom, do you want to go to Tello?
Sure. Let's talk about Tello for a second. So let's see, let's double check. You can hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you fine. So what our listeners may have seen was that a bunch of articles appeared. I saw the Electrek article was getting some interesting comments. Tello took the wraps off their first drivable prototype of its initial product, the MT1, and the embargo lifted.
Wow.
But you had a sneak preview when you're on your secret mission. Tell us all about it.
All right. So real quick, so on the screen now, if you're watching this on YouTube, you can see the truck was just being revealed to us for the first time. So last week I went out and checked it out. So I was here for the initial secret reveal, I guess, but we can share it with you now. So if you're unfamiliar with Tello, it's a young company started by Jason Marks, who's there in the picture there now. Forest North and their designer Yves Behar. So basically they wanted to build small vehicles with big vehicle utility. So we did an episode about this company with Forest about 3 months ago. He started Mission Motors, an electric motorcycle company, back in 2008, and then later he started PlugShare, which I think many of our viewers would be familiar with PlugShare. That's the app that you can find your charging stations with. But getting back to the truck, so the MT1, this thing is like the length of a Mini Cooper. But it still manages to have four doors, five seats. There's a bed that's like 60, 62 inches long. The bed is like 49 inches wide between the wheel arches, so it can take like a 4x8 sheet of plywood. It has a mid-gate, kind of folds down, so the second row can become part of the bed and allows you to carry that 4x8 sheet of plywood with the tailgate up, even in this like small thing. It doesn't have a frunk. Somebody asked earlier. It does not have a frunk. but it does have under the bed storage space, similar like to the gear tunnel in the Rivian R1T. This is a little bit farther back, and you'll see it. It'll come up on this on the video here after a little bit. Let me just actually full screen that for you all. All right. Right. So Atello calls this the monster tunnel because it's under the bed. Pause for dramatic effect. Okay. For the production version, they're targeting like a 4 second 0-60 from 500 horsepower from dual motors in a 350 mile range. The single motor version is supposed to have 300 horsepower, do 0-60 in 4.5 seconds, which is still pretty quick. So our ride was short. We got to go for a ride in this, a few of us. We just went down the street and back, basically. But it's early days. This is like very much a prototype vehicle. But it was still plenty quick. I think he had the torque set at like 40% of what it was actually, capable of. And it was, it was plenty quick at that power level for sure. So I'm 6'2". I had plenty of room. My friend Alex from Motor Trend, oh, there's the monster tunnel there. You can see it goes like all the way through. So you can just put a couple like overnight bags or what do you call your carry-on luggage. It should fit a couple carry-on luggage trolleys in there. So yeah, my friend Alex from Motor Trend was with us, and he's 6'10". And he, he went for this ride in the passenger seat, and we were all like checking, and sure enough, like he had like a bit of room, like a half inch, and it, not tons, obviously. It's like he's like super tall. But it's pretty cool to see.
What's it like when you see the truck in person? Because with the dimensions of which they've designed it, when you just look at the pictures or the videos of it without people for context and for comparison, it sort of it can play. The dimensions can play with your mind a little bit. You're like, is that a tiny little K car thing? Is that actually quite a big truck? And like, what's the wheel size? So now you've actually been up close next to it and you've ridden in it and you've had a good sniff around. Like, what do the dimensions do in person? Does it all kind of make sense?
Yeah. I mean, it kind of boggles the mind a bit because it is like maybe later on we put it beside a Mini Cooper outside and it's literally the same footprint as a Mini Cooper. But there's a few things going on here that makes it do that. So they've basically chopped off the whole nose of the truck. So it's got 14 inches between in the front end for like crash structure deformability. So it should still be crash. It should be relatively safe in a crash. And I think they're doing that with computers right now. Eventually they'll have to smash some to make sure, but, so yeah, that's chopped off. And when you sit in that front seat, you're really close to the windshield. It's like the opposite of the Cybertruck, where the windshield is like a mile away from you. This one, in this, is like really close, and the seats are adjusted so that you sit up straight up. They do recline somewhat and move. The seat design is actually kind of interesting itself. They're on the like pedestals, so you can like get your, because the everything is shifted so far forward. It's not. The ingress is a little bit tricky to get in, but because of the seat design, it kind of allows your feet to kind of scoot underneath the lip of the front. And so all the tilting mechanism and all that is built into like the cushion part of the seat. Like usually in a vehicle, it sits on a couple tracks on the floor, but this is like totally different. They've put all those mechanisms up into the seat themselves, which is an interesting bit of engineering. It's got an AX native adapter in the left hand in the driver's side tail light on the back. It just kind of like comes down and it plugs in there. It's still early days though, so it's hard to. I don't want to put all the. There's not a whole lot of specs, really that we can talk about exactly. Really, it's just more the packaging of the thing and just gonna see it and meet the team behind it. And here, this gentleman here. Liam is the interior design person, so he's talking about all the different materials, and there's a lot of wool in all these materials, and there's cork in the door, those little panels behind that the door handles are set into. It's like cork. It feels pretty nice. It's got a glass roof like so many EVs today. I don't know. It's just kind of really exciting to see up front, they had this like concept in their mind. And they're just going through the steps of making it happen. This facility is the ARIA Group, and they make just custom prototypes and different things like that for different clients. So that's their partner in the venture anyway.
Tom, did they talk about manufacturing at all, like where they're going to make it?
No, that's still. I really focused on what was in front of me and not so much like the future plans and things, but I kind of think they're looking at contract manufacturing, basically.
Be the way to go.
Like a Magna or Foxconn or
whatever. There is zero reason for anyone to build their own factory if they're making, anything as like a small run of vehicles. That would be just crazy to have your own facility. For anyone who missed the interview show that we did with them a little while ago, and I guess what you've probably not talked to yet is just to sort of zoom out a little bit or take a step back and ask why. Like the US loves big trucks. Like if you have a truck, like one way to do it is make it bigger. Like we saw this week with the Escalade IQ. They made the Escalade IQ L and just added a whole bunch of rear end on the thing. Like that Escalade did not need to be bigger, but the way that the US does things, let's make it bigger. Whereas this obviously is a way of having a load of utility in a smaller form factor. So let's back up a little bit. And, we missed that program on our channel and it is available to go watch. What's the philosophy? Why do this?
So America does like big trucks, but America also loves small trucks. If you're on the internet for any period of time looking at comments talking about trucks and different sizes of trucks, man, there's always this huge chorus of people in the background talking about, their old days with a small Chevy Toyota Tacoma when it was small, you could reach across and lock and unlock the passenger door. Or like the Ford Rangers and people really kind of miss that those small trucks because you can get a lot of utility, and they've really worked on this kind of make it super have super utility and in keeping the footprint super small, because there's a whole lot of advantages to a small vehicle in a city environment. It's so much easier to handle, to deal with everything. I don't know. I love it. I don't know.
I just wonder if it would have been better if they gave the front passenger compartment a little bit more room, and instead of having full permanent seats in the back, like those fold down jump seats that the early small Tacomas used to have, I had a couple of those and I rarely use the back seats. I use it mostly just to throw stuff back there. But every now and then somebody went back there and they folded the seat down and just kind of squished in and sat for a little while. This isn't a cross-country family driver. I almost would prefer to have more room up front and cut that back area out a little bit. I like this concept. I've talked on the show before about I want to import a Honda Acty and convert it to electric, but to do it right, I looked at the numbers and everything. I'm looking at $60,000, and it's just then it'll be worth $25,000 when I'm done with it, So State of Charge doesn't do that well just yet. But I would love a little electric pickup truck like this just to tool around in. And I wish this had the fold down bed walls like the Acties do, where you could make it like a flatbed.
That'd be cool.
They unlatch and they fold down on the sides, and it's a little flatbed truck. My friend has one. He didn't convert it, but he imported one and totally fixed it up, painted it, rebuilt the motor and everything. And it's awesome. It's his daily driver. The thing's so cool. Right-hand drive, stick shift. You got to shift with your left hand. And, we've gone on many drives with it, and I'd love to get one of those electric. This is kind of along that same concept. So, honestly, guys, if this comes to production, you'll probably almost definitely see me in it. I'm still concerned about it coming to production. So many of these small upstarts that have awesome concepts, the canoe, what was cooler than that canoe truck? I had a deposit on that, which I did get my deposit back, at the very end when they were right before bankruptcy and everything. But this thing would be so cool to tool around in. I'd have a blast in this. So I hope they make it, but I don't have high confidence that they'll make it at this point because of so many other upstarts that had great concepts that just, you know, it's goddamned hard to bring a production vehicle, you know, to market. It's way harder than people think. Even the people that are in the know, like this company, of that have experienced, you know, executives that have been in this industry for a while, it's really difficult. So, you know, good luck for them. Good luck for Tello. But
yeah, and the really difficult thing is that often these companies just need more money, and they just, and whether that is through institutional investors or crowdfunding, Aptera have been at this for a really long time. And Aptera's business these days is almost just in the hype business. And we love Aptera. We've interviewed them. We support them. And like, they just need more money to do the next step and the next phase. But they're also really busy building hype because they've done crowdfunding and they've gone to members of the public and not just institutional investors. And yet, so to do that, you've got to build hype and talk big all the time. And yet actually what you need to do, ideally, if you had some sort of sugar daddy that could just provide the money, is to say, look, we would like to maybe one day just break even on the project. Like, we'd like to make 2,000 of these. And it was the problem with Fisker is that Fisker hadn't even shipped the Ocean, or maybe they had, and like they had all these problems to fix, and they didn't even just say, here's our next car. Like, here's our next cars, because Henrik had sat down with his pencil and been a busy boy rather than running a car company, and it, in the end, it went into the ground. And like, but they had the time, they were either looking for, like, you know, a sort of a Nissan or somebody else that perhaps would come in and spend some money. And it is, it's not an impossible situation. You can do it. And there's loads of small, really small, interesting car companies in the UK. Like, the UK is a real hub and a center of not only motorsport, but particularly around the Midlands, funnily enough, you know, that sort of, that whole motorsport area. And it's similar in Italy as well, where there's a bunch of smaller, really interesting companies that make a small profit and do really interesting things, but don't have goals to conquer the world. I'd just love Tello to get to where they want to get to with this, with, you know, with realistic hopes and hopefully enough money in the bank, because this thing looks fantastic. Look at that.
Yeah, financing, raising capital is like a big part of, you know, starting a small company, obviously, right? So they've been kind of bootstrapping it, but like, it really would be great to have, like, so this is like the point of building like a workable prototype and really showcasing your concept and your idea, is hopefully attract capital. People can see the promise of potential in a vehicle like this. And, you know, if you could win over, just need to win over those few key people and to unlock, you know, a bunch of capital to kind of get you going on your way. But, you know, they're not talking like, sorry, my mind's blanking on me here, but they're pretty modest goals, I think, and they've just focused a lot of their energy and attention on, you know, building, engineering this vehicle, this, you know, just getting into the packaging and right, everything. There's, you can see the mid gate folds down. It's really simple to, you know, it's kind of,
that looks cool. Yeah, I think Diane sums up all of our feelings. I hope they do well, she says.
Right.
And looks good, she says. But yeah, completely. We hope they do well. And we're fully behind Tello. Let's hope they get there. We're fully behind Aptera. I know we're sometimes a bit cynical about these things. It's easy to be. We're fully behind them, but they've got a massive job on their hands. So, there it is, next to the Mini Cooper. So that, and you know, Minis have got fat these days anyway. So that's interesting to have a look at that.
Yeah.
I think almost any like head-on collision, even at, doesn't even have to be at a high speed, will total this, because that whole front drivetrain is going to be destroyed with those wheels. Yeah. I mean, my Equinox is being fixed now. Matter of fact, at 11 o'clock when our podcast ends today, I have an update video going out on the damage that was done just by being struck, parked on the side of the road and hitting that rear wheel. When you hit wheels, the whole suspension, all the braces and everything, those parts are expensive, and it's adding up. I mean, a head-on, you know, 20 mile an hour collision might total this thing, because the wheels are right there. So, but I mean, you don't make or buy a car dependent on what's going to total it. You know, as long as the passenger compartment is safe and, you know, you survive the accident, well, you can get another vehicle. But seeing how those wheels are exposed and everything, that's, you know, any type of front end hit is going to either total it or be really close to totaling it. So
yeah, that's a fair point. It looks almost looks like when you look at the vehicle, even standing right beside it, it kind of looks like the front edge of the vehicle are the wheels, but actually the bumper is like a better part of an inch just ahead of that. But it's really hard to see when you're like standing there, even standing right beside it. It looks like it's, which is great for some things like off-road capabilities, you know, but also like you say, not great for moving after if you crash it in anything, it's going to, you know. Yeah.
Mm. All right. Well, that's all good. We'll update you on more Tello stuff when we hear it. Now, get those pictures and videos ready of the Volvo ES90, Dom, because this was a big launch this week. And if you think, well, Volvo are just releasing a sedan saloon version of the EX90, which is out already, you couldn't be more wrong. The Volvo ES90 is a full-size, fully electric liftback sedan, almost like a crossover appearance. We'll get some pictures on screen soon. It's Volvo's sixth electric vehicle, and it's their first 800-volt car. And the EX90 is not. It runs on a 400-volt architecture. It's built on the same platforms. This is SPA2 or SPA2, as Jim Rowan, who's CEO, called it on stage when they unveiled this vehicle. It's the same platform as the Polestar 3 as well. So 800-volt platform on this ES90 will charge faster and go farther than any previous electric Volvo. They say it'll add 186 miles of range or 300 Ks. In a 10-minute stop, WLTP range of 435 miles or 700 kilometers. Let's get a nice big picture on screen and you can see this thing. So it's over 5 meters long. It's over 3.1 meter wheelbase. And that's why the dimensions, again, like the Tello on the other end of the scale, kind of play with your mind a little bit, because they painted the lower sills of the doors, the front passenger doors, between the axles. They painted that kind of gloss black to almost like make it look like the car is sitting up a little bit more. Plays with your eyes a little bit. But when you look at the height of the vehicle, it's as high as some SUVs, but you can do that. It's running on 22s in this picture. This is the ultra trim that you're looking at on screen right now. And so it looks like normal proportions of a saloon sedan, but it's got a big liftback, hatchback, if you like. So very, very practical. Yes, it does come, obviously, with the little will it fit thing inscribed on the black plastic of the boot lid. It's got those new sea lights at the back that we were having a look at the minute ago. And the front we're looking at right now on the YouTube version of the podcast, those Thor's Hammer headlights, which we first saw in the 2000s from Polestar, from Volvo. Sorry. Freudian slip. I'll address it now, Tom. Stick a Polestar on a logo on this thing. Like, stick a Polestar logo on that and you are off and away to the races. I mean, it's not a million miles away, is it, from what a Polestar could look like?
Not at all. And it goes back to, I think, the first time we even talked about Polestar on, back then it was the Inside EVs podcast, was, you know, when I questioned why are they creating a new brand. Why, you know, the vehicles, the design language is so similar. Why did they have to create Polestar? Why wasn't, you know, a Polestar division of Volvo or just Volvo's electric vehicles? And, you know, it seems like Polestar itself now is struggling, and they make great electric vehicles. I love driving Polestars. One of my favorite vehicles to drive. And now you can almost see here, like, this could very well have been a Polestar. The design language, you know, it's just the DNA is, you know, they're brothers, the Polestar and Volvo. So it just reminds me back to that decision. I'm sure the company had a reason why they wanted to create this new brand, but I wish it would have just been Volvo electric cars, because it had such better brand recognition here in the US than Polestar. Nobody knows who they are. They don't know if the brand's going to last. Everybody, you know, believes that Volvo is going to be around for a long time. I think Polestar vehicles would have sold a lot better, at least here in the U.S., under the Volvo brand. So
no, I agree.
Getting back to this vehicle, love it.
This is cool.
It's a hatchback, too. Love the design language. Charges like a beast. This is kind of where we need to be with today's electric vehicles. Unfortunately, we probably won't get it here in the U.S. It's made in China. You know, by the time they're ready to sell this here, they'll probably be 100%, you know, tariff on everything that comes here. It looks like we're at the beginning of a ridiculous, enormous trade war with everybody. You know, it's not just we're not picking on anyone in particular like we used to just pick on China. But it's unfortunate. But this is a great electric vehicle. I'd love to get the opportunity to drive one. I am going to China once or twice in the next couple of months, so I might ping them and see if I could check one out while I'm there.
Yeah, this is no doubt going to be a for China vehicle. Look at the size of, if you're going watching the video version of this podcast, the size of that rear door. Like, it's got massive room in the back, over 3.1 meter wheelbase, like I say. And even if you put the front seats all the way back, you can't even reach, when you're sitting in the back, the front seats. A ridiculous amount of room. So they didn't say it, obviously, at the launch, that we're watching the launch video now with Jim Rowan on stage. But this is going to be a hugely important car in China. Doesn't launch first in China. Launches here. Its pricing has gone on sale. I configured mine. It starts at 69. I didn't buy it, by the way. But I did configure my dream spec. So three versions, single motor or dual. There's two dual motor versions. So you either get the single motor version, which has a smaller battery pack, 92 kilowatt hours gross, 88 usable, or there's two versions, at least the UK configurator last night when I was doing my one, shown either the twin motor or twin motor performance. Now, the twin motor ones get a physically bigger battery, 106 kilowatt hour. And again, if you've been paying attention at the back of class, you're thinking, hang on, EX90 is 111, isn't it? Yeah, this is a different vehicle. They didn't just lift up the body of the EX90, plonk this on top and go, right, boys, off down for some Swedish snacks in, Gothenburg. So they've redesigned the car. And look, he's jumping off the platform again. This is, we're watching the version on stage right now. It's kind of balancing on almost right. like an upside down pyramid. And this thing turns halfway through the presentation as well. Now, Volvo's thing is like a life in balance, I think, was the marketing phrase they used. I just saw it on screen just now. There's Jim leaning against it. How is this thing balancing on that? It's like such a brilliant visual effect. So cool. And hey, at the end of this video, it's a 35-minute long presentation. It was a great car launch. They played, the TV ad for it. And yeah, the TV ad features a guy who is a career guy. You know, he's probably late 30s. He's white, middle class. Has an office job, and he sort of gets pulled between different scenarios. So he's like having a business meeting, and then he sort of gets like pulled out and like CGI computer effects put him into a tuxedo, and he's out on a date night with a beautiful wife, and then he sort of gets pulled out of that, and he's playing ball with his, perfect kids and family and stuff. And like, they didn't make any pretense that this is going to be a fleet car, a company car, probably guys more than women. Painting with broad brushstrokes, obviously. I'm not being sexist about it, but everyone's got a market of a different car. And that they absolutely firmly said, like, this is probably going to be, a fleet car for a certain type of buyer. I thought it was interesting. What else do you want to know about it? Really fast. 3.9 seconds, 0-60 miles an hour. Why wasn't this the thumbnail, says Gary? Gary, come and work for us and do our YouTube channel for us.
You're hired. It wasn't.
It's a massive wheelbase. Pricing starts at €72,000, £69,000 on this. And I've talked a lot, but I'll just shut up and say this thing's beautiful. But maybe I'm like the guy in the advert. Like, I'm like the middle-aged guy with the young kids and I feel like I'm pulled in a thousand different directions. My phone's always pinging and they're saying, hey, get inside. It's the quietest Volvo they've ever made. And it's got like a 25-speaker Bowers & Wilkins thing that it's all about get in the car and just relax. Like, forget your phone is there just constantly hassling you. I was like, oh, okay, that's the audience of this car. So I mean, it's like beautiful.
It's kind of like a replacement for the S90, basically, then. We're still a 90, right? Because the Volvo makes like the S90 sedan, then they make a V90 station wagon, and, of course, the XC90 SUV. So we've got the electric SUV, the EX90, and this is, I guess, the replacement for the S90. And, yeah, I was looking on the Volvo website, and you can't buy like a new S90, but you have to go in their existing inventory, basically. And they're not cheap. They're like the same prices, pretty much the same prices as this. Like, this starts at €72,000 and going up to €95,000 for the top spec. If you look at the inventory, S90s, they're all up in the 70,000s, I believe. So it's interesting to see that it's not like especially a bunch more expensive now that the electric version is out than the combustion version was. It's pretty close in price, I feel like.
Yeah, it's actually a little shorter than an S90, but the wheelbase is much bigger.
Right.
And just loads of space in it. They did, in the presentation, give the 300 kilometers in 10 minutes? I don't know, in miles. Mm. Apologies. But, you know, they were saying like a 10-minute stop, great charge curve. They did bring the CTO out. We're watching a little promo video they made here with, you know, with the focus all on balance. This is Eric Severinsen, the Chief Product and Strategy Officer, who balances a pen on his finger in a minute. It's all a very clever little visual effect. Or did he do this for real? Maybe that's his party trick. Anyway, yeah, very, very interesting vehicle. Oh, and they are going to bring the tech to the EX90, but not till a mid-cycle refresh. So they wanted to get the EX90 out on a 400-volt platform to get it out. But what was interesting, actually, is they talked a lot about the technology being much more efficiently rolled out now. They talked about, they called it Super Stack Tech Stack or Super Set Tech Stack or something.
Oh, yeah, right. It's like the processing for everything. So when they update, you know, usually traditionally we had different modules controlling different things all over the car. So this is like a more refined architecture for that. It's similar to what I think Rivian is doing. It keeps everything updatable very easily. And if they really high-end processor kind of controlling everything. They have a special name for like Super Stack or something like that.
So that basically. And that will be updating the SPA2 platform. So Polestar 3, EX90 will get the new hardware free of charge. So obviously you won't get an 800-volt architecture because the bits are different. All the components are different. It's much more heat efficient and, you know, bigger isn't necessarily better. Not like 800 is better than 400. But generally speaking, it probably is. Yeah. And they can't change that.
We don't have it in a running order today, but while you're talking about high voltages, BYD has this like 1000V platform they're kind of bringing out. BYD hasn't really had an 800-volt kind of platform before, and this is what that is. And they're like looking at really high voltages, even beyond like 1000 volts for like big trucks. But for even like consumer vehicles, they have this like 1000V platform, they're calling it, rolling out. Something to keep an eye on in the future.
In the comments, I lost it now. Someone asked, oh, there you go, Big HM Bill asks, EX60 on the same platform? No, EX60 SPA3, new platform. And that will, again, underpin the next set of cars coming from. Oh, they did talk about the EX. No, they didn't. They didn't talk about. They teased the EX60. Now, they had the design director. What's her name? Sophie. I forget her full name. Apologies. It'll be on screen, I imagine, when they introduce her. If I can bring that on screen. Sophie. Oh, it's gone off screen now. But I'll try to do three things. Three things at once. Let me pop that on. Oh, no, you've done that. There we go. So they did like a little fake out. And she goes, I've got my pass here. Let me just show you the brand new car, and buzzes it on the door and opens. He goes, oh, no, not that room. And then sort of steps away. Like a nice little fake out. So, but if you pause it in just the right place, you get this frame. This is the EX60, which is nice, right? That's, I don't know what we see.
I'm sure it looks great. I mean, all the Volvos look great, pretty much. Yeah.
And they did give an awful lot of time. So this lady is that I don't know her job title, Director of Design of the Shanghai Studio. Apologies. I've forgotten both her surname and her official title. They gave her a lot of time on stage. Obviously, she's been very involved in the project and sort of leading the design of it. But even in the pre-recorded videos, they've always had an American speaker and a Chinese speaker as well, like an American woman and then a Chinese man who, you know, speaking obviously in English language, but like, you add all the clues together, this is very clearly a car that is going to, people in China who want to be driven in this vehicle, very, very important market for Volvo. But yeah, full of technology. And the computers, the NVIDIA Orin chips, I think they're called, will be, like I say, going to the EX90 and Polestar 3, I don't know, but certainly the X90.
But well, you mentioned before that it would add 300 kilometers in 10 minutes. So that's like 185 miles. Depending on what metric they're using, WLTP or, EPA, that's Taycan and Lucid Air charging speed. Mm-hmm. Both of those vehicles are right in that wheelhouse. So if it does charge that well, I mean, that's amazing. That's top of class charging at 10 minutes, almost 200 miles. So just to put that into perspective.
Yeah, charging beast, like you say. All right, we'll take a quick break for our audio listeners, 50 minutes in. And when we come back, let's talk Escalade IQL, the long version. Like the Escalade needed to be bigger. Stick around, back in a moment. All right, welcome back to the podcast. I did mention the Escalade IQL. Should we have a look at it on screen quickly, Dom? We've got a bit of extra time because John couldn't join us this week, but that's okay. We can do a short show.
We can talk
do a midweek show with John. Let's get the Escalade IQL on screen because it's ridiculous and it's brilliant. And it adds 4.2 inches to the rear section, giving the third row more legroom and another inch of headroom plus more trunk space. Total length, 228.5 inches. And if you were going to go buy didn't want to buy an Escalade because it simply wasn't big enough. There's now a bigger one. Will this even fit in the garage is my question. All the space is at the back. It's not a longer wheelbase, as I mentioned before. So,
Kyle, I'm not sure if he's still in the comments or not, but he did a video with the regular version of this. And I looked at it last night. And man, this thing is huge. Like it's bigger than the regular Escalade even. It looks a little bit more sleek. Somehow, but it is actually larger than the regular Escalade before they even put the extra length on the end. But he got into the third row, but barely. He could hardly get back in there because there's a whole seatbelt issue. It's like you have to kind of work way under the seatbelt to get back in there. But even once you get back in there, there's no room. It looked like the headroom was okay, not great, but definitely not enough leg room, even though the second row was kind of pushed forward a fair amount. So this thing you really need, if you wanted the third row, you really need to get the L. And if you want to put adults in the back, at least, so as weird as it sounds, this thing kind of needed the longer version, I really feel like they probably shouldn't even put the third row in the small version, just keep that for this one, and option, cause it's an optional. It's an optional row. You can get it without that as well.
Could never be too big for our market. How long is it? Do we have the dimensions?
228.5 inches.
All right. So, I mean, that's big. It's not quite as big as my Lightning. The Lightning's long. The Lightning's, I think, 233 or something like that. So it'll fit my garage.
2 feet. Dom is checking
with AI. But no, I'm not
AI.
Thinking about it. I'd go for the tello over this.
It's 19 feet long. It's 19 feet long, basically, and a half an inch. Wow. it's like crazy.
It's massive. We love these huge things here. Go to any parking lot, in a ShopRite. There'll be Escalades and Tahoes and Navigators. We just love these big vehicles.
And it's only 27 for the
most
longer.
People don't need them, but
the longer version, it's only $2,700 more. And considering it, so in the United States, it starts at $132,695 for the long version. So you're already up there, way up there in price. So $2,000, $2,700 either way, I don't think it's going to be a big difference, if you can afford that, whatever. Yeah, this the small addition to make up for the extra length is not a big deal.
So all the extra room has just been added to hang over the back. So they haven't done the old extend the wheelbase trick and added any more room, but apart from add some more space to the back and more headroom. I'm gonna dive out of the stream. You guys talk. My kid's school is calling me, so I'll be back in a moment.
Sure. So, Tom, why would anyone buy this instead of the Gravity, the Lucid Gravity, you know?
Well, look, I just said go into the parking lot, see how many of these huge behemoths are out there. People like these huge, they want to drive around in their living room. They want the comfort of sitting in a living room. Not that the Gravity's not comfortable, but, I think, people also equate the size with safety, which, is true to a point. You can engineer smaller vehicles to be extraordinarily safe and have fantastic crash test results. We've proven that. We learned a lot more about how to engineer vehicles, how to have crumple zones and all that stuff. But, so many people do that. When I've shown friends my smaller cars, like I used to drive hatchbacks and so forth, one of the first things was, oh, I'd never drive that death trap. Well, it's probably as safe in a crash as, the big vehicle you're driving. And sometimes it's safer. It depends on how it's engineered. But, people love these giant vehicles. I have friends that drive Tahoes and Denalis. One of my closest friends drives this giant, huge Denali. He doesn't need, his kids are gone. They're off, graduated college, engaged, married. So it's just him and his wife, and he's driving around in a giant, 7-passenger Denali all the time. But,
are just large, big frames and tall and big frames. And sometimes like a big vehicle is kind of like you need a big vehicle just to get comfortable, But I'm with Electric Brian here. He just wants the 2026 Bolt. Chevy Bolt EV. We all do. We're looking forward to seeing it. We haven't heard anything about that car yet, but that's down the road. Someone asked, affable alpaca. Will the Bolt fit inside?
I might end up getting one when my Equinox lease is up, So I only took a 2-year lease on
the Bolt.
The next gen Bolt. I only took a 2-year lease on it because I really just got it to make content and just to really live with it for a little while and see if it was truly a good vehicle. I'm disappointed that I had this accident now because I wanted to do a lot of cold weather stuff with it. I actually had a cold weather range test scheduled the day after the accident happened. So I was going to do a 70 mile an hour and even an 80 mile an hour range test with it when it was, below 10 degrees out overnight, but all that got put on hold now, but it's going to be warm by the time I get it back. So I'll do that next year, but I'm looking forward to the Bolt, the 2026 Bolt for sure. And I think if GM's doing good right now with their electric vehicle program started to take off after stalling for a few years, but the vehicles are pretty good vehicles that they're putting out now. And I'm happy with the Equinox.
Well, speaking of GM vehicles,
exactly.
Here's the Honda Prologue. I just might as well touch on this while we wait for Martin to get back. So the Honda Prologue has been called the surprise hit of 2024. Hey, welcome back, Martin.
Sorry about that.
It's still selling strong. So this thing, it sold like 3,744 units in January. It outsold, I think, everything that wasn't a Tesla in the last quarter of 2024 as well. It's been doing really great, but it is made in at the GM plant in Mexico, so it could be affected by tariffs in the future. We'll see how that plays out. But it's just kind of interesting because we're just pulling up the story with Prologue now is that it's improved. It got better for 2025. It's the same price. The pricing hasn't changed, but now it gets like the single motor trim, so it's a front wheel drive. And a single motor gets 12 miles of extra range. So it gets tops out at 308 miles and 13 miles for the EX and Touring models, which are all-wheel drive. And then 10 miles for the Elite, which probably has bigger wheels on, I would imagine. So that gives them a total of 294 and 283 miles, respectively, for those all-wheel drive trims. Power and torque are up slightly as well. There's just a whole lot, made this car just even a little bit better. And I think they've done this just by swapping out the front motor. So they've got the front motor is now a little bit more powerful and a little bit more efficient, it seems like. So put those all together and that gives you a great, feel-good story about the Honda Prologue, which people have been snapping up because it's like the Chevy Blazer EV, except you can get Apple Apple, what is it? CarPlay, and
but it's not a Honda though.
It's not.
It's a Honda, but it's not. It's still GM. All the improvements that have been made to it aren't Honda improvements, are they? There's GM called and said, "Do you want a bit more?" It's like when Tom owned the restaurant and they'd say, "Hey, do you want coffee at the end of your pizza?" You go, "Yeah, sure, I'll have that as well. Add it to the bill." It's great. It's all margin. You know, this is just GM have called them up and say, "Hey, do you want another motor?" Like, "Yeah, sure, bung it on the bill." Like, Honda have done nothing for that.
And these updates, GM is pushing out to their vehicles too, or they already got them.
This is not necessarily a Honda only thing. I haven't heard anything about the Equinox or the Blazer getting a better new front motor, though. Have you?
Yeah, they got updates. I told you, I got three of my friends to get Equinox. One got a 2024 like I do. The two got 2025s. The 2025s have the more powerful motor, or have the updates. So even the interior was updated. Oh, the 2024 was only out for a couple of months, and then 2025's come in. They updated a bunch of stuff. They got the wireless cell phone charger, which I didn't have. You could get the head-up display, which wasn't available in 2024. So they kind of pushed it out a little bit early, the Blazer and the Equinox, I think. And now they're really giving customers what they initially, what it should have started out with, to be honest with you.
But I would just say, to their credit, I think Honda has Honda-fied this a little bit. From what I understand, the ride's a bit more refined. It's just dialed in a little bit better, I understand, than the GM versions of it, basically.
Yeah, and I like how the Prologue looks better than the Blazer, to be honest with you.
Right.
I love how that rear kind of squats down. It almost the back almost reminds me a little bit of Range Rover esque a little bit, but. I think the Prologue looks great. I like the Blazer too, but I like the Prologue more.
Yeah, I kind of think I do too. Brennan says the Blazer got the updates. 2025 has up to 335 EPA range for rear-wheel drive, and SS has more power and 300 miles of EPA range. Front-wheel drive available as well. Thanks for that. For some reason, I don't remember the new story coming out, new motor story for the GM products, but okay.
Good. We can talk about the Kia EV9. Owners in the United States can now get a new wall box. And I always use that word as a shorthand for EVSE or your home charger. But this time I actually do mean it, because Wallbox is the company. The Quasar 2 is the new bi-directional charger enabling all of these features. So Kia EV9 owners, the car is all ready to do it. Vehicle-to-home integration. Take advantage of low energy rates, even power your home, average American home, 2-3 days, they were saying, if you do get a power car or an adverse weather event. And a bi-directional charger is required. Of course, it's the Wallbox Quasar 2, now taking pre-orders. Deliveries begin in June. It can handle 12.5 kilowatts on AC. It's got the DC plug on it, so it'll do 12.8 kilowatts, which is slightly more. And it's $6,500. Why are all these solutions so blinking expensive, Tom? Is it that much more money?
That is very expensive. I mean, that costs more than the GM and Ford system. So I don't know. I don't have an answer. I know that this has taken a long time to come out here in the U.S. I remember, and that there's Doug Alfaro. I've spoken with him many times. Even the first time I talked to him, I think it was either 5 or 6 years ago at CES when the Quasar was coming out, the original one. And he told me that it'll be in the U.S. market in 6 to 8 months. This was 6 years ago. And it's finally, now it's the Quasar 2. It's finally here. So I've actually talked to both them and Kia about this, and we're considering having them come out and install it here in the garage. Getting a EV9 for a little while to use and demonstrate and everything. But I don't know if I really want something like this that permanently installed here, because I'm not going to have an EV9. So, I'm still deciding whether to do that or to travel to one of their locations where it's all set up and spend a day or two there with an EV9 and the unit, and maybe get an interview or two with either Doug or somebody from Kia. So one of those things are going to happen. It's either going to be here in the garage, or I'm going to go somewhere and we're going to make some videos on the whole system, how it works, and pluses and minuses and so forth. But yeah, this is good. I just wish it would service any electric vehicle. You know, the whole bidirectional stuff is it's still in its infancy with EVs as far as compatibility. And it's like, yeah, I've got the Charge Station Pro behind me and the home integration kit for Ford, but it'll only work with my Lightning. The GM system, you know, only works with their vehicles. This seemingly only works with the EV9, but I don't have all confirmation on that yet, on how the software works with it and everything. And that's part of the interview that I'm going to do with them and talk about, you know, compatibility and you know, being able to get one system for any electric vehicle you have. You know, it's like if I were to sell my Lightning tomorrow, then my whole Ford integration kit, just throw it out because I can't use it on anything. We need to get to a point where if you're going to make this big investment, the $6,000 investment, it's got to work on your next vehicle too. It's got to work on any vehicle that you use. What if you have two EVs that are bidirectional? You know, and only one of them, you know, you need two systems. It's ridiculous. So I know there's a lot of work on this now being standards. I'm hoping I'm going to go out to that EV charging conference out in Vegas in a couple of weeks. And I think there's even a workshop on bidirectional standards and so forth. I'll go to that. We I know they've been working on this for a while because I talked to folks that were working and developing on a standard like 2 years ago. How is it not done at this point? So, you know, but
maybe you can answer me this, Tom. Why do they have it for the EV9 but nothing else? The EV6 or Ioniq, or you know, yeah. Why not the EV6? Why is the EV9 only and no Hyundai's? I don't know if Hyundai has anything that does this, but it should. Yeah,
well, that'll be part of everything that I'll talk to them when I do a video. You know, for sure.
Right.
I'm pretty sure over the years on my podcast, I have talked about things like SAE standards for vehicle to home and vehicle to grid. And I don't know if they ever were just working documents or whatever. But as Tom says, like, it's ridiculous that we're not further ahead. This has been since CHAdeMO in Japan 15 years ago or something when they were doing trials. It's so small time still, and it's so specialist, and it's so, especially with, you know, the Ford system and Tesla's Cybertruck system. It's so a walled garden, like Tom says. It's like no one's going to make this investment if they think they're going to be changing EV brands every 3 years when your lease ends or something.
I mean, I would have never put in the Ford system if I didn't do what I do for a living. You know, it's just not worth it. You know, and I even talked about that in the video, my full review of it. I said, look, I love it. It's cool. But you know, I don't know how you make a business case for this. Now, there are some people in specific use cases where it does make sense, right. But not enough to sustain making it a profitable venture for Ford or whoever designed it to make it. You know, there's just not that many people to use it because it only works on that vehicle. But if you had a system and you knew, well, this will work on the next five cars I buy over the next 30 years, you know, then now all of a sudden you can amortize the cost of it over time. But the way it is now, these systems are great, but I can't imagine, unless you have some really funky energy arbitrage where you're going to, you know, charge your EV during the day. I mean, at night when it's low cost, and then use your EV to power your house during the day if you work at home. You know, I mean, you can have a stationary, another separate stationary energy storage where you fill it up with that. That you can kind of figure out and make it work. But there's not a lot of use cases, in my opinion, to make this work financially.
Yeah. 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 And like so much stuff that we talked about recent podcasts with Enel pulling out of, you know, North America, and you know, if you've spent hundreds of thousands on commercial charges in the ground, that's a big deal. That's your business. But equally, if you are spending $5,000 to $10,000 on upgrading your home equipment, then you don't want to rely on one car company or one particular EVSE manufacturer. And that's where, again, we talked a lot about, you know, with standards, and openness with Gleb at the time, but for vehicle to home and vehicle to grid, it's ridiculous to think that the average person is going to make that investment unless it's all standardized. And that,
yeah, but we have to start somewhere, Martin.
Yeah, you know, but then you have to start somewhere. Yeah, like
this wasn't going to roll out perfect, you know, in the beginning of it. So,
yep. And you know, when I put my home store, I have a SolarEdge home storage system behind this wall, funnily enough, in the garage. And I remember when they put it in, and I hadn't asked the question before. I was like, oh, is this, when I go onto the app, this is going through SolarEdge's service. How much can I do locally? And they're like, well, nothing. It has to go through us. Now, I have come offline, and through my home assistant, I do talk to my inverter locally. But I presume they could turn that off with an OTA update. And I have to go through their servers. So if they go bust tomorrow, I probably won't. They're publicly listed. They're quite a big company. But we've seen this in China with new car companies that came and people spent huge amounts of money on cars. And the car company goes bust and they don't. I mean, it's the Fisker thing. So unless it's a standard and other companies can come in, you can move platforms. And I mean, you're right. It's got to start somewhere. It has to start somewhere. But I'm just frustrated by it because I'd like it to be further ahead than it is. After all these years of talking about it, it's ridiculous.
Cicero asks, Tom, have you seen V2H industry improve since you added your Ford system?
Yeah, not outwardly, but I know there's a lot of work been going on behind the scenes. So has a lot of progress been made? Not visibly, but maybe it has been behind the scenes. Maybe a standard has been established now, and the manufacturers are going to agree to use one. There's been no announcement on that yet, but they could be getting close to that or have arrived at that. You know, I mean, even this wall box system, I don't know, maybe it's designed and, you know, wall box is saying here, you know, anybody can use this system, but as long as you design your car to speak this language, you know, and this is a standard. So I don't know. That's why I'm anxious to talk to them about it.
Right on.
Good stuff. What can we finish on today? Disappointing. Go ahead, Dom.
I was just going to say, if John's not going to make it, we can talk a little bit about the tariffs since that's a, you know, ongoing situation. We can just like, I don't, maybe we can get him back for a special episode.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's get, because, you know, I've not been following the news apart
and they've
from,
been put on hold for now.
Apart from, they were coming in last month, then they got put back by a month, then they came in for 36 hours and they've been put back by a month. What happens in a month's time?
My prediction is it'll get put back another month. I do not think the tariffs on automotive will go through personally. I could be wrong. Shit, I've been wrong here a lot. You guys know that. but I do not think that we're going to see them on automobiles because of how incredibly devastating it would be to the American companies. Devastating to Ford and GM. I mean, Ram. I don't know if anybody saw, there was a guy who made the rounds. His interview was on a bunch of news channels and all over the internet. Owns a dealership somewhere. I think it was in Wisconsin or something, Ram dealership. And the day that the tariffs like started, before that they stopped them, he went around his lot and he had to add like $22,000 to $23,000 onto every truck because they're all like $70,000 to $80,000 at Dodge Rams. He's like, how am I going to sell these now? The $81,000 truck's now $83,000. So I think that at some point, just my opinion, it'll be put off and I'll say, you know, we'll put them off for 6 months. So it's going to be one of those things that doesn't get implemented because I think enough, the auto industry is such a big, important industry and how devastating it's going to be. And wouldn't it have been smarter if we wanted to do something like this, even with the auto industry, with the tariffs, to say, look, as of January 1st, 2026 or something, you know, these are going to get implemented because the auto industry is different than a lot of other industries in the fact that the lead time to move manufacturing and to update manufacturing, it's incredibly long. Like it's impossible to start building cars, you know, get retooling lines and building cars here that were being built in Mexico and Canada. If that's the end result to get more cars built here, which I think is a good thing, you know, overall, it's impossible. So what you have is in that period of a year and a half, you just have financial devastation to dealers, to the companies themselves, in the billions.
Everybody.
So yeah, I don't think that we're going to see that right now. Who knows? But I think the auto tariff is going to get put away.
Right.
This one in automotive news sums it up nicely. Auto industry pleads for long-term trade certainty, less volatility. Yeah. They were coming in a month ago. They came in for 36 hours on Monday and then went again. I mean, what a Mickey Mouse way to run a country. Like, this is the great United States of America. And it's just an absolute joke. Like, what is going on with your government? This is it's just pathetic in terms of running a car company. These investments. I saw a thing from one of the spokespeople who talk on behalf of the White House and say, you know, we should move manufacturing to the US of parts. And it you couldn't do it in a month, but you can easily do it in 6 months. And then like three of the CEOs of the massive, not the Valeos of the world, but, you know, the big parts companies, I forget the specific ones. They all came out and went, it's a 2-year process. Like, if you're going to talk about our industry, at least know something about our industry. These jobs are specialized. The parts are specialized. We can, of course we could move. It would cost us billions of dollars, but we could. It's not a 6-month job. It's a 2-year job. Jog on, you know, nothing. And like, if you're going to mess up an entire automotive industry, like, what a way to do it. I guess I'm detached, aren't I? Because I'm so far away from you guys, but what an absolute mess. If I was the CEO of a car company, like, how many sleepless nights are you having at the minute? Like, how do you plan on running a business when 1 minute, it's adding $12,000 to the price of a vehicle, and 1 minute it's not. I mean, it's weird stuff.
Unique industry.
That is
the number I was seeing, like up to $10,000 per vehicle, like a regular vehicle. Like, I guess the big expensive trucks, I guess you could get a lot more. But
a $40,000 vehicle would be $10,000. It's 25%. So the average new car price in the U.S. is just around $50,000. So,
but you can't even look at just like the 25% part, because it's also like the parts as well. So parts go back and forth across the border, like sometimes several times, you know, before, and so they're going to get hit by that 25% every time they cross the border before they get put into a car that gets sent across and gets hit by that tariff again. So we've spent like decades integrating our supply chain in North America, you know, to cover North America and Canada and the U.S. And there's some really good reasons why we do this. You know, it's good for the U.S. automakers to have a manufacturing base spread out in different places. So Canada, this helps Canadians, you know, be able to. It just creates a lot of opportunity there, so people can buy the cars and create a market for the cars. It's not just like, are you going to build them all in the U.S. and expect Canada to pay whatever. I mean, then Canada, if they're not being built here, why not just have China come in and build a plant, and we'll drive BYDs or Zeekers or whatever, you know? We have good reasons for integrating our supply chain through the North America like this.
Well, yeah, it's fascinating.
Hopefully we'll get John on for a dedicated show, because John's the guy to talk about the Detroit auto industry. And for whatever reason, he couldn't make it today. That's why we had his name on the thumbnail, in the header. John had agreed to come on the show today, but he couldn't make it for whatever reason. I'm sure it's a legit reason. John's a true pro, so we'll get him on for a dedicated show at some point, and we'll really dive into what he thinks the effects would be and how he thinks this is going to play out. I can't imagine that it'll actually happen the way that the administration initially said it would, that here's a hard date. You know, right now we're going to add 25% tax. If they do, they're going to kick it way down the road, like a year or so.
It should be a year away.
Even a year is not enough. We probably need 18 months at the earliest to so it doesn't become an enormous financial burden on the automakers. Yeah. But, you know, maybe he'll put, say January 1st, 2026. And then when that comes, you know, Canada's been doing great with stopping fentanyl, so we don't need to do this. I think the other products, the tariffs are going to remain. But the auto industry is unique and has a lot of influence. And you can imagine the lobbyists that were in D.C. saying, you cannot do this. You know, you understand what it's going to do to the economy.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was just going to ask, the Chinese ones, tariffs are still going on though, right? It was up 20%, I think.
It was 10, it's now 20 on all Chinese goods.
So that still affects us, that can still affect workers, because we have a lot of, we ship with BMW and Mercedes manufacture in the US, and they ship a bunch of their SUVs to China from here. And that's going to just hollow out all that business for them. And, you know, whatever, they already have to sell 10 to 15% below MSRP in China, because China has had a price war going on for the last 3 years. So margins are super tight already, and they're selling under MSRP. So having to raise any prices, they're just going to, they just can't compete there. And that's a lot of workers in, like, I'm not sure, Alabama, I believe, in the southern states, a bunch of workers are probably either going to lose their job or find another product to build in the States, which could be an option as well, because, you know, we have some tariffs on Europe. I think we're talking about some tariffs on Europe or increasing them. And so anything to encourage automakers to, you know, make those products here instead of Europe and ship them over, I suppose that'd be one way to do it.
I would say, having just been through Brexit, life goes on. And yep. We're all still here, and we're all still fine.
True.
And that was a long process of which I disagreed vehemently on. I think we're better together rather than putting up walls and borders between us.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's just a pain in my backside now, because I can't travel around Europe as easy as I used to travel around Europe. But all the cheap Chinese cars that we can buy, because when the European Union added up to 45% tariffs on Chinese-made cars, the UK went, well, we don't have to, because we left the EU. So guess what? Like the Volvo ES90 we talked about a lot on this show will be made in China and sold here with no tariffs, because we don't need to follow Europe. So we've been through that, and we're still here. Everyone's okay. I don't run an import-export business, so I can be flippant. But, you know, I don't worry too much. Like, life goes on, but, yeah, we'll wait and see.
I mean, there's a whole lot of other, you know, political things, considerations with this tariff. It's not just the tariffs. It's also, you know, joking about invading Mexico to go after the cartel.
That's all nonsense. It's just distraction from other things. Hey, I'll make a prediction, then you can play it back and say you were wrong. On the 7th of March, 2025, I predict if everything goes south, Musk is going to get thrown under the bus. That's my prediction. So watching it from a distance, I just don't see that he is... I think he's expendable to the whole operation. I think he's bitten off more than he can chew with politics. Politics is gnarly, my friend. Politics will chew you up and spit you out. Like, he might be rich and he might have run a couple of companies, but he's no politician. Like, you look at those people that are survivors on Capitol Hill. Like, they know how to work the system. I look at him on TV, and he's like looking around at his new environment, being like, "Oh, hey, this is really cool. Like, I'm in politics now." I reckon if it all goes well, he'll be good. I reckon if it all goes south, I reckon he gets thrown under the bus. That's my prediction. And the great thing is, like the Roadster, I never have to ship the result of that, because I can always be like, well, it's going to be in 6 months' time.
Right.
Martin, if you followed Don Trump for any length of time, you'll know everyone's expendable.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a one-way. He insists on complete loyalty, but it's a one-way loyalty stream. You know, he's got a line of people ready to take your position at any moment. And, if you can serve him now, you're on board. If he gets tired of you, or you can't serve him next week, next, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe he's a bit more mercenary than others, but I feel like all politicians, like, at that level are kind of like, have to be like that, you know. They have to be ready to jettison their best friend at a moment's notice, just because, you know, if they want to hold power or keep their popularity at whatever level. People are just expendable, basically.
Yeah. All right. Martin's unhinged. I don't know about that, but anyway. Thanks for your time today, people. It's been a lot of fun with you guys in the audience and us here. That is probably the end of our show before we drive you mad with politics.
But only for today, though.
Oh, we'll be back. That's not the end of our show. I hope not, anyway.
Yeah, we got some midweek episodes coming up next week, I think.
Nice. Okay. let's remind people that you can, if you want to, have a look at the comment section, leave a question there or a comment, and we'd love to hear from you. It's always good to see what's on your mind. And if you want to hit subscribe and little like, little thumbs up on the video, it helps us out. It tells the YouTube algorithm that, hey, we're not so bad. Other people might like this. If you click the little bell icon, you get notified of the new shows that we do. As Dom says, loads of shows coming up soon on the horizon as well, which we're very excited about. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you again very soon. Oh, hey, Dom, say ciao.
Ciao.